Everyone, this is Eva Herr, and welcome to the Healing of Agape this week. First of all, I want to tell you that my new book is finally here after only a decade. It's called Agape, the Antenna of the Soul. If you're interested, you can get a copy by contacting me or Blogin Service or Amazon.com. Now, today we have a very interesting guest. He's going to tell you some things that you might not believe. But you can leave him, if for no other reason, because my good friend Tom Bearden recommended him. Welcome, Scott Stevens, and can we wait to hear about scalar energy from you?
Glad to be here this afternoon.
How are you?
I'm enjoying this this beginning of the holiday season. It's always a good time of year, at least for weather.
With the weather, right.
Yeah,
but
the
you have some things to tell us about the weather.
Oh, yeah.
So tell us a little bit about yourself so everybody will know who you are, and tell us your website, and if you've published any books, tell us about those, and then we want to hear what you have to say.
Oh, I had actually got interested in weather quite a long time ago. It was when I was in Scouts and in the process of doing merit badges. I'd come across the weather merit badge, and I thought this one looked interesting. So I eventually went through what I needed to do, the requirements to get the badge, and one of those was to watch the local television, log the weather and the forecast and do a comparison. And in the process, we had to build our own instrumentation and begin to keep our own weather log for 30 days. As often is the case, once you start something and do it for 30 days, it can quickly become habit. And it was just an area that interested me greatly. And so I just kept on keeping on, even after the weather merit badge was accomplished. And I was 12 at the time. So this is something I've been interested for quite some time. From there, I had just kind of parlayed that interest in weather in junior high through high school and continuing my interest in the science and eventually off to education at the University of Kansas and studied meteorology. And finished it.
You might have to speak up just a little bit.
One of the areas was broadcast meteorology that they offered their course in. And so that's immediately what I was most interested in, because as a project for the Scouts was reporting the local community temperatures to a station. It was something I wanted to do for my Eagle badge. I didn't get to do that because it didn't demonstrate leadership, so I ended up with another project. But nevertheless, it got me in touch with the local weatherman at our TV station, and we just became friends. And that began my little crusade into weather. I've worked at stations in Topeka, Kansas, Omaha, Nebraska, Tulsa, Oklahoma, Albany, New York, and then returning home out here to the West in Idaho. So it's been 18 years that I've been doing television weather and then interested in it for upwards of 30 years. So it's been a long time interest of mine. Boy, where I came across the engineering aspect of weather was a little more interesting. Because of Tom Bearden's website, I was researching free energy, magnetic propulsion, and those kinds of concepts. And there was a sidebar on Tom's website, Schneier.org, which discussed Soviet weather engineering. This was, I believe, in 1999 and 2000. We had already been through a couple of winters where weather out here in the West was simply not behaving as the models were predicting it to. And our modeling of the atmosphere is pretty good. But the guys back in Washington, D.C., and literally throughout much of the country, we were just struggling with failed forecast after failed forecast. And I wanted to know what was going on. So that weather engineering immediately caught my eye. I'd also visited some other websites, one of them being Radar Matrix. And they look at anomalies that show up on the radar, whether they're flashes, whether they're bright concentric rings, whether they look like fans, like handheld cooling fans that would just flutter as the radar would scan the sky. There, I kind of got the impression that there was something going on weather-wise that was not well known, and us in the meteorology community just were not, we just didn't know anything about. This was above and beyond our education and training. And that's where Tom Bearden's work came in, the scalar aspect of engineering the climate. And in Tom's site, there was a quote from a defense secretary, William Cohen, at an anti-terrorism conference back in 1997. And it specifically talks about the capabilities of engineering the climate. And I found that to be a rather interesting quote, and it goes something like this. Others are engaging even in a type of eco-type of terrorism where they can alter the climate, set off earthquakes, volcanoes, remotely through the use of electromagnetic waves. So there are plenty of ingenious minds out there that are at work finding ways in which they can wreak terror upon other nations. It's real, and that's the reason why we have to intensify our efforts, and that's why it's so important to us. And you can read the quote, but it's hard to understand or comprehend what it really means if you don't understand the technology of electromagnetic waves, and that these electromagnetic waves can be far more potent than, say, Hertzian waves, which we use in broadcasting cell phones or radio and television broadcasts. Now, these Hertzian waves, as they propagate away from the transmitter, drop off in intensity at the power of the square of the distance. So if you go twice the distance, it's one quarter the power. Now, these scalar waves are very different. Essentially, you can call them scalar waves. You can call them gravity waves or space-time waves.
What exactly does scalar mean?
A potential, a vector potential. And so that means the waves are there, but it's still, unless something acts upon them, they're just steady state. They're just there. And so it takes an interference of two waves to generate action or work.
So somebody would provide a wave, and then somebody would have to send an interfering wave to make something happen. So somebody has to do something.
Or, as in the case of the demonstrations, or at least the blueprints we've got from these Soviet weapons, is that you have two antenna attached to the same transmitter. And then the waves go out slightly off frequency to each other off of resonance, and then they provide that interference pattern at a distance. What is fascinating about these waves is that they are bi-directional, meaning they can go to the interference zone and then back to the transmitter, so you can send data along them or retrieve information from a distance and bring it back to the source point. That's huge. Because
it certainly is.
So, because if we're dealing with weather, then that means we can deposit energy, we can deposit heat at a point in space-time. And then we can also extract that energy that's going to go back to the transmitter. Then they've got to do something else with it, either retransmit it to another space-time location in the third dimension, or vent it, just simply turn it into heat, and then it's got to vent back out into the atmosphere.
Now, let me ask you a question. For people that don't understand what you mean by third dimension, what do you mean by that?
We've got height, width, and time.
Okay.
So we've got depth. So we're working within this, actually it's four dimensions, because there's going to be some location in this time stream where this event is going to happen. And it's interesting because there's one satellite image that caught my attention. And truly, I've been primed for several years about reading Bearden's material and some of the cloud anomalies and then the background information of how this technology works. But it wasn't until I saw a satellite image that was just so bizarre that I didn't recognize what was happening, or I didn't realize. After you read his material, you come across the assumption that, okay, at certain times, yes, they're capable of engineering the weather, whether it's generating an Arctic cold front or stimulating a hurricane or enhancing the potential of a line of severe thunderstorms resulting in, you know, larger tornadoes than what would be there otherwise. My epiphany was that as I looked at the satellite imagery, that it was a Sunday afternoon, a cold front in Montana, and the clouds simply weren't right. They were aligned north-south, like cut bread, sliced bread, just pulled out of the bag, that there were these parallel intersections along this cold front. And I thought, well, that's unusual. That's awfully, awfully ordered for the storms to behave. And then towards the end of the squall line, these cut lines kinked and ran perpendicular. So they moved exactly 90 degrees off the previous lines, and the cold front literally jumped to the south about 10 kilometers. And then as the storm continued its westward propagation, the lines resumed to their north-south orientation. So something was in the way. And also within that cold front, there was a hole missing, a square missing. And
now, I understand what you're talking about, but for those who don't, when you say a hole missing, I think I do anyway,
mm-hmm.
do you mean in the vertical and horizontal frequency lines there was a spot that was void where there shouldn't have been a void?
It was, yes. There were clouds simply like there was bread dough laid out. Somebody had come along with a cookie cutter and pulled out the mass. It was simply missing, and it was in a square shape. What was fascinating is that this missing cloud was all of a sudden about 200, it wasn't even that far, it's about 150 miles farther to the east on the other side of a mountain range. The missing cloud was stamped out just west of Yellowstone, but then the representative cloud of orientation and same size was manifest on top of Billings, Montana. So I'm thinking that they were able to just assemble using grids or squares these weather patterns. This is just so strange. So it was at that time I just got a sick feeling to my stomach because I realized that this weather grid was on all the time. And it wasn't just confined to the big events, that it would be much easier to control the big events if you had control of the entire game.
Are you saying that, and maybe I missed something here, because I'm looking at your website as you talk, but are you saying that they cut out a piece and placed it somewhere else?
In fact, the picture from my front page on weatherwars.info, the article is about partway down, and it's called Chemtrails and Trimming a Storm's Potential. So I've got a black and white visible animation, and just beneath that there's a link. It's right above the Wilma on Steroids article. So on the front page of weatherwars.info, go down, find Chemtrails and Trimming a Storm's Potential.
That's scary.
So you follow that link, and then on that page, it's the second image. It's a black and white visible image taken on the evening of June 7th.
That's just really scary.
And I've got three arrows on that picture. The bottom two arrows show where the square has been extracted out of this cold front. And then this square mass of clouds has literally just been dropped off some distance off to the east. The orientation of the squares match perfectly.
That's just amazing.
Do you see it there?
I'll have to.
You're not quite there yet.
I closed it because I realized I couldn't focus on your website and you had to say
yeah, that didn't happen. But what I realized was that it wasn't the mountains that was determining the development of these clouds, that it wasn't necessarily the cold front moving through Montana at that point in time that was determining how strong these clouds got, that there was an electrical process at work that was superseding all of these other aspects which we use in forecasting the weather. And that means that it is this electrical process which now we need to be forecasting, and not the thermal, not the convective, not the moisture. So we've been trying to forecast the byproduct of the electrical processes of this planet.
Were you able to ever discern whether or not if their equipment was turned on and functioning at the time these things were going on? Is there a way to discern that?
Well, the Russian woodpecker grid, which was kind of the first really big clue that there was weather engineering, or at least gave us a begin date for whether weather engineering happens all the time. And that begin date was Bicentennial Weekend, 1976. And so that's when this Russian woodpecker grid, which if you want to hear it, all you'd have to do is have a shortwave radio and then scan through the frequencies from about 3 megahertz up to 30 megahertz. And it's these scalar weapons pulsing the planet full of potential energy. They're setting up a reservoir of standing waves to be used at any time. It's like pulling back on a rubber band, and it's always tight, ready to be released or have that energy teased out. And that was the beginning of the weather operations. And it's like being in a swimming pool or a small lake where there's a wave machine, and the wave machine is constantly pulsing. And so you get these waves rolling past and sloshing up on the beach. And then when you want a bigger storm, the waves are pulsed harder and they're timed more in resonance to generate the storm. And then when other nations begin their weather engineering operations, you have multiple wave machines in the lake. And so what used to be a relatively, a calm lake, and you would get periods of storminess, there is always now this wave action upon this lake. And it's all artificial. And that, sadly, is where the weather has now become, that the natural processes of the planet appear to be simply overwhelmed by this energy that is now being pulsed through the planet Earth. So the question begs, how much of the weather that we have now is natural and how much of it is man-made? And the more and more I look at the imagery, and it doesn't matter whether we're looking over Patagonia, South America, across the Sahara, or into the open waters of the Indian Ocean, these waves have circled the globe. And our weather is now as a result of this technology.
And there are people out there that believe that the recent Hurricane Katrina was a manufactured hurricane.
All of them are. We're to the point where if there's a weakness that shows up within, say, the subtropical ridge, whether it's the tropics, the waves coming off sub-Saharan Africa and then propagating across the tropical easterlies, or if it's a weakness that shows up off the Bahamas, all of these are potentials for hurricanes. And you end up with those weather makers deciding which one of these opportunities do we want to exploit to create a hurricane. And if the conditions are already favorable for the development, all they have to do is continue the favorable environment and tease it into existence. We don't have to use, the multi-gigawatts or multi-megaton bombs, which are the heat equivalent that these storms release. It's already an electrical process. All we have to do is enhance that in the direction we would like the weather to take. We don't have to redo the whole process from the ground. We just take what's there and tweak it.
Why do you suppose that people have the ability to do this, knowing that it will be devastating to the people of their country? Why are they doing this?
This is war. This is a cold war. This was a faction within the KGB that developed this scalar technology. And this was not shared with the general military. There are many reasons why people who are addicted to power, who are addicted to these kind of events, want to keep going on. You know, they don't think like we do, and they don't value human life as we do.
They don't realize they're doing it to their own loved ones?
No.
They just don't care?
No. I'm sure they do realize it. It's just that it's a group of elite. And their resources, their physical needs will be met. And what happens to the poor people is not of concern. There's a different mentality here. Now, if it were truly we, the people running these governments, the world situation would be very different. There would be much more in the way of peace. The elite have always been able to get half the poor to fight the other half. They've been able to do that since the beginning of civilization back in Sumeria. That's the function of royalty.
Well, I have to admit, I'm not a big proponent of conspiracy theories, because I think that I think that thought is real and
Absolutely.
That it manifests, because thought is energy. You know, it's electricity conducted by water in your brain, so
mm-hmm.
it manifests. And I believe that if we focus on negativity, that it will occur. But somebody did say something to me the other day that made me think. It said, did you not notice, Eva, that Hurricane Katrina and the one after, I forget the name of it, came up around the coast of Florida, took a left, hit our oil fields, and hit New Orleans. Then they send the people of New Orleans to Houston, and a week or two later, there's a hurricane in Houston,
yep.
wiping them out again. You really think that's really real?
Oh, absolutely. And FEMA had surplus ice after Katrina, after they finally got their their P's and Q's lined up. They had a lot of leftover ice, and they were storing it across the country. And the guy who was NBC did an interview of this company who was managing the ice, and they were storing it out here in Idaho, which is a long ways away from the Gulf Coast. And he said, "What I don't understand is why they ordered this much ice again."
You mean they ordered it before the next storm?
Before the next storm, even as they had surplus ice and were storing it, you know, in 46 states around the country.
Amazing.
So there's simply a playbook, and it is this playbook of these very large events that happen in time.
So what do we do?
You came back and you have the answer. You have the answer, and that is the power of thought. That is the one power in the universe that we have over them. It is the one bit of information that they will try to keep us from utilizing. This is why within most religions there are so many layers between you and the divine. There are these bishops and cardinals and priests and all of this stuff. They separate your power from the connectedness of the oneness of all of us. And if they can keep us disconnected and keep us in the mentality of being a victim, which is that of powerlessness, then they can control us. Yeah. And that is ultimately the plan, is to keep us in a victim mentality.
When I was, after Tom gave me your name and I did a little research about who you are, things popped up about scalar energy and mind control.
Mm-hmm.
I suppose, you know, when you think a thought, it's conducted and taken through the atmosphere by electromagnetic energy. So I suppose if scalar energy is electromagnetic, it could affect our thoughts.
That's one aspect, is that there has been so much research done since, well, the 1940s on how energy, the energy of the soul, the energy of the mind connects to the physical body. And that they're so far developed where they can broadcast a signal on a carrier wave to your body and piggyback on that signal the feeling of, say, the flu.
And now, would they do that by saying the flu resonates at, I don't know, 230,000.27 hertz?
Mm-hmm.
So would they enter that number into their weaponry machine?
Yep.
And broadcast that frequency?
Exactly. And then our bodies get that flu vibe. That doesn't mean we've been infected, but it will elicit a response, a chemical biological response within the body, because it thinks it has a visitor and it's got to go. It marshals a response to that signature, to that energy vibration. And you can then spread spectrum, blast the body with, say, anthrax, even though there is no anthrax there. And then you get that kind of a response. And if you do this multiple times, then the body is in a weakened state because it's constantly fighting these diseases that it believes are there but aren't. And then it's open to local environmental, whether it's a local flu, whether it's a malaria, something locally that does get into the body, something that we would otherwise be very easily handle, it struggles with. And this is one of the reasons why you get kind of concerned about all the sinus issues that people, Americans, have been facing lately. Sinus and allergy and upper respiratory infections. These have become far, far more common than they were 15 years ago. And you wonder if that isn't a subversive way of weakening a vast majority of population's health. Go ahead.
Somebody gave me a website the other day called www.googleworld.com.
Oh,
and when you enter your address, you can literally see your own house.
Yeah.
So
fascinating,
would they do that by logging in the longitude, the latitude, and then that frequency number? Is that how they would do that?
That's possible. And there have also been fireballs seen in the sky. Plasma balls of varying colors. And if you want to know if you've been targeted by this, then you can see or will see those balls around. And that is like that would be the best connect or the best analogy. Let's say you've got a rifle and you attach a laser sight to it and you see the red point.
Oh.
And then, as Rita, actually, as we've seen numerous hurricanes work through the Florida Peninsula and through the Straits of Florida, these plasma balls of varying colors, orange, yellow, and red, have been seen numerous times. Channel 6 out of Orlando did a piece on them, and that's the registration tool used to aim these scalar weapons.
So why would they choose to target individual citizens?
Because they pose some kind of a threat. You know, and it, not knowing their specific agenda, it would be hard to speculate on that. But they can, and usually it's information. Information.
Would it be our own government or someone else?
Sure, certainly it could be.
Really?
Certainly it could be. I mean, they've got many secrets, and they always say national security. No, it's national secrecy. We've got things that we don't want to tell you. And this is a whole different kind of game that we believe we had peace after the Cold War. We had peace in between Vietnam and the present conditions. No, it was just a temporary stand down, just a temporary cessation of active activities. That doesn't mean that there haven't been these events going on. We've had two shuttles that have not returned home after missions. With Challenger being blown up, and Bearden is certain that was a scalar strike.
Really?
That metal was softened. That is, the metal softened. It was unable to withstand the stresses associated with launch.
Well, I'm curious now. Have you had, I'm sorry, I have one of those bugs you're talking about.
Mm-hmm. Me too.
Have you had anybody,
I've
send
just
you
had
messages?
Black Hawk helicopters over the house.
I did too.
Is it?
About 9 o'clock one night, there were two of them.
Uh-huh.
About, I bet they were not more than 200 feet above my house.
Yep. That happened.
What is that?
That happened to me the day I did an interview on CNN about this.
Well, it happened when I began to channel. I had a near-death experience, and it brought on, for whatever reason, I have no control over what my interest suddenly soared to. My interest suddenly soared to quantum physics, hydrogen fuel, and this scalar and harp energy. And so I did a radio show on hydrogen fuel, and not a week later, I had two Black Hawk helicopters over my house.
See,
what good does that do for a helicopter to sit over your house?
Oh, not a thing. Not a thing. It's just to let you know that they know. And it honestly isn't any more than that. It can't be. At least not while this nation has some semblance of freedom left.
And, is that what they did to your house? Just come and sit for a couple minutes?
Oh, it was much quicker than that. Much quicker than that.
I just heard this huge noise, and it was right about dark. And I went out and looked out the window, and there was just two helicopters sitting up there. Those big black giant ones.
Uh-huh. Yep, they're big jobs. Big choppers. You know, it happens. And, you know, you can't let it concern you. You just keep doing what you need to do. You know, there are agendas much, much larger than they would like us to know about. Projects that are big. But, you know, once you weaken a population, and you can weaken them on a massive scale, it becomes easy to achieve fatalities, whether it's worth a flu outbreak, and the flu outbreak doesn't have to be terribly virulent. It's just that if the body is somewhat weakened ahead of time, then you'll have a greater mortality rate. And it's kind of curious about the bird flu, because they're really hyping that up right now. They're keep pushing bird flu. And it honestly shouldn't be surprising that we're going to end up with viruses like that when there are so many birds raised at such high densities. You've got a million birds in maybe, 500 acres, you know, in these bird farms in the east and here in the country, in the states as well. It's just we're raising our food in very, very unhealthy environments.
Well, what is the difference between scalar and harp?
Harp uses regular waves. just regular Hertzian waves, from very low frequency waves, which can be used for communication with submarines at great depth, but with long antenna over the horizon radar. They can use then high frequency radio waves to achieve a different result, different experimentation with the ionosphere or magnetosphere or some combination of the two. I have seen pictures where we have these contrails and chemtrails that are crisscrossed across the sky. And then there are little bursts of energy within this artificial cloud cover. And so HAARP's potential is just utterly amazing. It's like the scalar weapons, but at a junior high level. And there are multiple arrays of this HAARP antenna. I think they've got one in Greenland. They're building one, or there already is one in Scandinavia. Russia has one, apart from the scalar weapons program.
Isn't there one in Alaska, too?
In Gnoca, Alaska. Yep. And it will be, the transmitters are being upgraded presently. The number of antennas has been tripled in the last 24 months. So it will be a formidable array when it fully comes online, which will be, I would guess, by springtime.
And what do they do with that if, other than communicate?
Oh, atmospheric studies. They've created an artificial aurora in the ionosphere. They can use it to spy over the horizon, literally track aircraft or missiles. If they're in Alaska, they can see what's going on out over the Mid-Atlantic, bouncing these beams through the ionosphere. They can use it to do ground-penetrating radar. So as the shuttle would orbit the Earth, they can bounce these signals off of a target in space and then get ground penetration. It's a phenomenal, phenomenal scientific bonanza. It's just that if it were all scientific and not military in deployment and intent, I don't think many of us would have a problem with it.
Can HAARP or scalar actually cause explosions?
Absolutely. Absolutely. The scalar specifically, because some of the early clues that things were going on that were unusual were coming from airline pilots flying the Great Circle route from San Francisco and Seattle across the Pacific Rim into Alaska and then dropping down over the Sea of Japan and into Tokyo or into Seoul. And they would see these explosions that looked like, well, they were, looked like mushroom clouds, but they would just boom, appear, and then rise very quickly to altitudes exceeding 10, 11 miles in height. And these mushroom clouds would grow to those heights in under 2 minutes. And they would be cold explosion, where literally a small portion of space-time was evacuated of matter. And then the surrounding space-time would collapse, creating these cold explosions. And that comes into the bidirectional ability of these scalar waves to deposit energy, matter, or to extract it from a local area. The same thing can happen with aircraft engines. You extract the energy out of the zone where the plane is, and you end up with engines flaming out.
Well, I guess if one of our houses explodes because we're exposing this, we'll know what happens.
Many things could happen, I suppose. I mean, you could trigger, if you deposited energy, you would have an explosion. You could rupture gas lines. You could melt the piping or even the nails that would hold the house together, softening, using a specific frequency resonance, and you would melt the steel that would hold the structure together. There was a plane crash in Greece this summer where the bodies came down largely frozen. You remember
really?
That story?
No, I don't keep up much with the news because I don't believe it all.
Well, yeah, you don't know what to keep up on or what's literally just bunk. But these bodies came down, and some of them were frozen through.
Really?
Which was huge. And that is the heat, the energy being extracted out of that local environment. And down goes the
plane.
Well,
that's certainly not a regular explosion.
Oh, no. And that's the whole point, we've got something else going on here.
You keep talking about chemtrails. What is that?
Chemtrails, as I got into more and more this weather modification, that the chemtrail issue was just constantly there. And I'm a photographer as well. So in the landscape photography I do, it was nice to compose the clouds and the unnaturalness of the clouds, the geometry in the clouds, with the terrain. It makes a nice juxtaposition. But I wasn't brave enough to discover and get into the chemtrail issue. But one day, last August of 04, I was standing with a neighbor out in the front yard of the house, and this 747 comes lumbering over the city, making a nice little arc towards the southwest. It came from the northeast. It was low enough that you could hear the engines, but they were flaming white smoke. All four engines, it looked like it was flaming out and going down. That was concerning. That was concerning because I thought, okay, this is one of those chemtrail planes that they talk about. The plane should not have been delivering smoke of that magnitude, and white smoke at that. And it continued to work across the city very quietly. Coming along, probably 10 minutes later, there were gaps that showed up in that particular trail. And then there would be other chemtrail planes that would come along and cross exactly through those openings in this previous 747's contrails. I thought, well, that's very curious. At that point, I ordered some webcams and stuck them in the windows around the house and attached them to a computer. When the sun comes up, they start recording pictures about every 4 seconds. And what I ended up with was time-lapse animations of the behavior of these planes. And they're marking the sky, looking for where we're dealing with this EM, this scalar energy, altering the atmosphere. Let's assume that the sky has been gridded up into zones like a chessboard. And each one of these squares on the chessboard, it has a specific depth, and there are layers of the chessboard beneath this top one. But the contrail planes are like chalk, where the chalk is then drawn across the checkers, the chessboard squares, and then each one of these squares is capable of being heated and cooled and moved in up and down and laterally. And that's what the trails are there to do, is to define the extent, the intensity, and where the scalar EM energy is altering the sky. Now, there's another aspect of this, and that may be that the particles, the barium and aluminum that we're finding, and the titanium oxide that we're finding in these mixtures, is also giving this electrical grid some adhesion to the atmosphere so that it can further heat and cool and move it along. But you'll watch the trails. Other planes will come along and mark up the trails where they show anomalies. It's very fascinating and surprisingly complex in, well, number one, that it's been kept relatively secret for so long, and just what they're doing. Because the Weather Service, when we get surveillance from the atmosphere, it's either from satellites in space, remote sensing, or from balloons. And the military is using a fleet of probably 1,000 aircraft. And so if we had that data going into our forecast models, the weather would be far, far more accurate, the weather forecast, that is. So that's one of the reasons of the trails. I also see other planes at night that are very regular time flying in non-airline traffic routes, and there may be part of an ozone shielding program as well. So there are, anytime you get 1,000 planes and fire up the chemical industry to put something in the atmosphere, you're going to try to knock down as many birds as you possibly can, get as many projects run at once.
But that was kind of my next question. I have friends that believe that those chemtrails are actually chemicals to make people sick.
I think they can make people sick.
She's convinced that it's chemicals they're depositing on top of it. But you really think that it's more for this tracking mechanism?
Oh, exactly. Exactly. I believe it is tracking, it is marking, it is surveillance. It has a lot to do with this, program of weather engineering, without a doubt. And it's just, you watch the behavior of the planes, and that's where it comes back to, is that they are located in specific locations ahead of certain weather weather events, whether they're closed lows coming into California, this big storm that is developing back east presently. It's impressive. It's impressive in its scope and its purpose.
Well, I hope that people listen, because right after Katrina hit, I said something to my husband, can you believe that was a manufactured storm? And he went, what? People can't, you're crazy. People can't manufacture storms, but it's real and it's happening.
You know, and as long as people take that attitude that this is simply not possible, then they'll continue to get away with it. And there was an interesting law that was passed this past October, Senate Bill 517, the Weather Modification and, more importantly, Technology Transfer Authorization Act.
Really?
And this was legislation submitted by a Republican out of Texas, Kay Bailey. And what we really hope is that this Senate bill provided a bridge for this technology to be drawn out of the secret government and then into public oversight. Whether this was unwittingly done by Kay, Senator Bailey, or intentionally done, the law is now passed. And it sets up an authorization board an oversight board of 11 members. And hopefully, if we can get this technology out into the public, then they will know to go after this technology and bring it into the light of day.
Have you talked with a lawyer in Washington named Jim Turner? If you haven't, maybe you should.
Yeah.
Because his law firm is pursuing things, especially with alternative medicine, but things like this. And if you look on my website on Blogging Service, I don't think we've aired it yet, but if we haven't,
mm-hmm.
we will be in the next few weeks. Or talk to me after we get off the radio and I'll give you his phone number, because their law firm goes after things like this.
Nice. Well, we need to have that. We need to have these brave people who will go out to do these things, to accomplish these legal acts that, on the whole, we can't afford to do or don't know to do, because we don't know how the system works. And so those kind of those are a great service. Those people that are
Give me a call sometime after this, and I'll give you his contact number.
Sure.
Because he's working hard on Kodak, and you know, I don't know if he knows about this or not, because I didn't know to ask him at that time. I had no idea there was some legislation out there, but, you know, maybe you can talk to him and get him working on your side to get this at least brought out into the public eye.
At least, yeah. Well, and I think we're also in a process of, I believe, disclosure, where those that are using this technology are ready for the world to know that it has been done and been done. Again, that some of that kind of comes back to, it's a function of terror. The planet's weather has changed, and it's changed dramatically now versus, say, 100 years ago. The number of hurricanes is up. The intensity of the hurricanes is up. This planet is warming at a pace that, honestly, is unsustainable. If we continue to warm this much more, we're going to end up with the failure of the North Atlantic thermocline, essentially the Gulf Stream current. There are return basins at the bottom of the Atlantic where this cold, well, what had been the Gulf Stream and the northerly flow along the east coast of the U.S., that warm water goes up north to these northern latitudes and gets cooled off during the winter. Now, from about 1950 to two winters ago, this cold air was sinking to the bottom of the Atlantic and then returning southbound. But numerous return basins have simply failed. Some of them have even backed up. Others are slowing down at the rate of 4% and 5% annually. So this change in the ocean circulation is already underway. Eight winters ago, the winter of 97 to 98, the shape of the Earth began to change. Whereas for the previous 10,000 years, because of the Ice Age, we had seen the poles getting closer together and the Earth was growing, or the equator was bulging outward. The Earth was getting more squat-like in shape. But as the poles melted, we were going through the post-glacial rebound, where the Earth was taking on a more circular shape. But suddenly, during that winter of 97, 98, this change in the shape of the Earth began to resemble, well, let's just say a volume of water was collecting around the equator. And even though the ice was still melting off the poles, the volume of water exceeded that that was melting off the poles that was holding steady across the equators. And so for the last 8 winters, the Earth has continued to get more and more squat again, like it's piling up ice on the poles, even though it's melting. So that tells us that there is something wrong going on.
So what will that cause to happen?
Well, if it's the oceans, then we know that the return flows have failed in many, many basins in the North Atlantic. Something is going to happen, and we'll end up with the failure of the circulation in the Atlantic very soon.
What does that mean to us, though?
What that means is the next ice age begins. Simply, Europe will begin to cool very quickly. And often these things, once they begin, we've settled into the new pattern in under a decade's time. The last really big cool down was in about 8250 BC, and the planet drops 9 degrees Fahrenheit. 9 degrees, and that was accomplished within a decade.
Really?
So we have been subject to these abrupt shifts in climate frequently in the past. But science, believes that, no, it's very gradual, it takes centuries to happen. No, that's not what history and that's not what paleoclimatology tells us, that these shifts happen abruptly and happen very quickly.
9 degrees doesn't sound like a lot, to a layperson like me. So what does that mean?
What that means is in the northern latitudes, meaning, say, anything north of about Tennessee, on an evening when you would, say, have a nighttime low of 40 degrees, which is sufficient, I mean, it's cool, but it's not frosty, then, say, you have a drop of 9 degrees, you end up with 33, or actually 31, you end up with frost. So what that does is in these northern latitudes, the growing season is insufficient to feed the population that's there. So you begin looking at Oklahoma and South, Georgia and South, as being able to sustain the population that they presently have.
I wouldn't have even thought about that.
Right. It's all about food. It's all about food. And this nation already imports half of all the food that we consume. Half of it we have to bring in from other countries. That's sad. Because
I would also imagine, since everything's about frequencies and electromagnetic fields, that this technology would affect the plates in the earth and shifts and volcanic activity and earthquakes. Would that be a logical thing to assume?
Certainly, certainly. And earthquakes are one of the things that Secretary of Defense Cohen warned us that this technology was capable of doing, was setting off earthquakes. If you pulse and deposit this energy into one side of a fault line, then it's to heat up. And as an object heats, it's going to have more energy available. It's also going to soften the rocks. And at some point, you'll get a slippage. And he talks about the ability to generate two kinds of quakes. One where the weapon is pulsed. And so you're constantly charging one side of a plate very quickly. And when that happens, you get a smaller quake, but then it's released much sooner after the weapon is tuned into it. The other kind is where the kinetic energy is just slowly deposited in, and then you get a much larger, much more widespread quake from this more gradual but still artificial build of energy into one side of a fault line.
Do you think that's what happened with that tsunami?
I think that's what happened with the Aceh earthquake last December, and also the Bamiran earthquake back in December 26th of 2003, which was almost to the day of the Banda Aceh earthquake.
Really?
I'll be very curious to see if we get another earthquake this coming December 26th.
Why do you suppose they picked that day?
They were both Muslim countries, and this was both the day after Christmas, a Christian holiday. So it was likely Christian tools used against Muslim countries.
That's amazing.
And it was, you know, we also, the Navy towed out a grossly damaged submarine out from Indonesia. And we finally got press to look at it in early February last year. The whole corner of the front edge of this nuclear sub was dangling off. They said it ran aground. Now, that was far more than running aground. That whole sub was just, the front of it was just destroyed. So you have to not wonder if we have not attached these seismic weapons to subs so they can go around and...
Oh, I see what you're saying.
And pull off these kind of covert activities that are then blamed on God. And as long as the planet is used as the weapon of choice, then there isn't responsibility tagged back to those who pull off and perpetrate these disasters. So the planet, as we get through this decade, is now the new weapon of choice. And these people will hide behind it as long as possible.
Do you have some kind of, I'm sure you've monitored things and have been researching. Do you have some kind of timeline when you think that things will come to a head?
You know, Bearden thinks we're in the 3-year time frame. I think we're going to be between, I think we're closer to the 2012 issue. I think we've got longer than Mr. Bearden does.
That number comes up a lot.
It really does. You know, it really does. And I think the biggest thing that a lot of Americans are going to have to contend with between now and then are economic.
Well, I think I told you that, you know, Daniel Brinkley and I had a conversation, and, you know, everything is about intent and energy,
yep.
Electromagnetic energy. And
yep.
I think that, you know, what the hell do I know? I'm just a Dunwoody housewife. I get information from somewhere, and it always comes out to be right. And I think because of the voltage and the amplitude and the magnitude of the negative intent, that it's probably shortened that time period by about 2 years.
That's very possible.
Because that's very strong weaponry.
You know, the thought is the most powerful tool that we have in this universe. It is thought that accesses the quantum realm, the quantum possibility. The well of creation comes from the quantum universe. And it is our power, our intentions, our thoughts, which control our individual health, the reality we create each day for us, our connection to the divine. All of these things come from our thoughts, as we're co-creators in this universe, on this planet. And their goal is to keep us powerless, to keep us separated from the wholeness, the uniqueness of us all, by keeping us as victims. And once we shed that victimhood mentality, all things will become possible for the human race. They may not become possible on this planet, but we're eternal beings.
That's right.
And we cannot be extinguished. And once you take that grand view and take back your power, then some wonderful, wonderful things will begin to happen to us all and for us all. And those will be things of our own creation and not those things that the powers that be want to happen to each of us.
Well, I think that you're absolutely right, and I think that that's a good note to end the show on tonight, because we're about out of time. End it on a positive note.
Sounds
good. I can't thank you enough for sharing this knowledge, because people don't believe it. At least you have the scientific background to show that it's not just something we're making up in our head.
And begin to look at the clouds in your own skies. They're just not right any longer. Start watching the skies. The answers, the confirmation that things are happening are above you each and every day.
Get a book out there, Scott.
It'll come. It'll come.
Get a book out there.
Okay.
Agape, my friend, and visit Scott's website. I think it's weatherwars.com. Am I right?
Weatherwars.info.
Weatherwars.info. And take a look at it, people. It's important to your life and the life of your children. Agape, my friend, and thank you. To Scott.
You betcha. Have a good day.
You have been listening to BBS Radio, a blogandservice.com production and a service to others endeavor. Thank you very much for tuning into our radio program, and wish you much peace and joy on your journey.